Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Lowe's knows how to set off your July 4th with savings. Right now, buy one, get one free on select one coat coverage interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Plus, get two select 2 or 2.5 quart red, white, and blue annuals for just $10. Hurry, these July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, excludes Alaska and Hawaii. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for more details.
What's your best story that is 100% real, but nobody believes you? Story one, I was in Sao Paulo, Brazil on a business trip. The night before departure, I wanted a drink, but the hotel lounge was closed for a private party. I didn't want to go outside the building alone at that time, so I started talking to one of the private guards. Then this lady came closer and asked if there was a problem. I explained to her that I was hoping to get a drink, but didn't want to be a bother. She started speaking in very good English. I can speak enough Portuguese to get by, but I'm definitely not fluent, and explained that it was a party after a wedding. She was older than me, probably in her late 40s, but very attractive. She asked if I wanted to join her upstairs for a drink, and she brought me to her room. We spent about 30 minutes being intimate in every possible way until she told me she had to go back to the lounge. I asked her why the rush, and she told me she was the mother of the bride. I felt like I was in a commercial. Story 2. When I was about 16, I was in a restaurant in Melbourne with my cousin. I noticed a young guy eating with his family. I said to my cousin, "Ha ha ha, hey look, it's Harry Potter," because he looked a lot like Daniel Radcliffe. My cousin replied, "That is Harry Potter." It was him. He was in Australia filming a local movie. A bit later, I went to the bathroom. While I was at the urinal, Daniel came in and used the one next to me. I looked over and we made eye contact. He said, "Nice wand," finished, washed his hands, and walked out. No one has ever believed this story, and only my cousin can vouch that we saw him, but not for what he said in the restroom. Story 3. On the way to visit a friend, my husband and I got lost on a highway in Pennsylvania. By some strange coincidence, my husband's friend drove past us in the opposite direction. We saw him and turned around to catch up. After pulling over, we were standing on the side of a two-lane highway discussing the directions to the friend's house. All around us were farms with corn and other crops. Out of nowhere, a duck appeared on the opposite side of the road. He stared at us curiously while we were talking. We watched as he looked both ways and waddled across the road to where we were standing. Cars honked as they tried to drive past. The duck walked up to my husband, pecked at his shoe once, and then turned around and crossed back through the traffic, narrowly avoiding the cars. He disappeared into the crops. He risked his life just to peck my husband's shoe and then waddled away forever. Story 4. I was in high school. I was at a friend's house party. My girlfriend got extremely drunk. I was struggling to enjoy myself because I was barely buzzed and she was being very loud. She wouldn't stop talking about how much she wanted to be intimate. I just wanted her to pass out, but she wouldn't take no for an answer. We went upstairs into a bedroom and started hooking up. She threw me onto the floor, got undressed like Jim Carrey and Bruce Almighty, and turned off the lights. She tore off my clothes, straddled me, and said, "You're going to love this," as she lowered herself onto me. It didn't even feel good. She was making these wild noises, and there was just too much friction. I wasn't feeling it and was about to ask her to stop. Then she let out a noise that sounded like a mix between a deep cough and a hiccup. I asked, "Babe, are you all right?" And that's when it happened. She lost control, and there was an explosive mess all over me. Apparently, we had been doing something unexpected, and her body couldn't handle it. So there I was, covered in regret, fast food, and trauma, in my friend's little brother's room. I was in shock, but knew someone had to clean it up quickly. Thankfully, everyone else was downstairs. I used my undershirt to clean myself and walked to the upstairs bathroom for supplies. I found some cleaning spray and air freshener. I went back to the room and cleaned as best I could. The carpet was an ugly gray, which helped hide things. I put my undershirt and the shirt we used to clean in a plastic bag I found in the room. I removed the screen from the window and tossed the bag into the backyard. The room looked fine except for the terrible smell. I left the window open and sprayed almost an entire bottle of air freshener like I was a crime scene cleaner. We went downstairs and I told my friend that my girlfriend had thrown up in the room and that no one should go in there until it aired out. We went outside, got in the car, and drove to the street behind the house. I walked between the houses, hopped the fence into the backyard, and retrieved the bag of shame, sorrow, and teenage horror. Story 5. I was on my way to the bus when I saw this dog calmly walking around. He approached me, I petted him a bit, and then went on my way. For some reason, he kept following me. There were other people around us, but he continued walking behind me. The bus station is by a busy street. I hoped to shake him off by the time I got there. But no. I wasn't sure what would happen if I got on the bus. Would he run after it? Would he try to hop on? The stop I intended to get off at is another heavily trafficked place. Neither option looked good, so I did the only thing I could think of. I headed home. On the way, I called my dad and told him a dog was following me. He laughed, thinking it was my way of trying to skip school. He went along with it, though, promising to drive us to the nearby dog shelter. Imagine his surprise when I came home with a dog. So, we drove to the dog shelter, where we had to turn him in. A week or so later, we got a call saying no one had claimed the dog or reported him missing. My dad wanted a dog, a different breed, though. But seeing as this fellow had followed me around, he figured, well, this is the dog. Story 6. When I was little, my younger brother and I were always staying with babysitters during the day. One time we were with the same babysitter for a few months. As soon as we got to her house, I would hang up my coat and my brother's coat on the hangers that were placed right before the basement stairs. My brother was too little to reach the hangers, so I had to hang his for him. Well, one day he got this stubborn idea that he wanted to hang his own coat. I remember being nervous, but I let him try anyway. He picked the hanger that was the closest to the top of the basement stairs. As he stood on his tiptoes, struggling to reach the hanger, he suddenly lost balance and fell down the basement stairs. The babysitter heard him crying and accused me of pushing him. She told my mom about it later. To this day, no one believes me that I didn't do it. I would never hurt my little brother. Story 7. I was working at a bar with a woman who used to be married to a pro wrestler. One night, the British Bulldog, Sid Vicious, and Macho Man Randy Savage came in for beers and to say hi to her. They ended up hanging out all night and got pretty loaded. She told me they were looking for something extra. I called my dealer at the time, and he dropped it off. Another bartender and I were invited to go drinking with them after our shift. We ended up riding in a limo with Sid and Macho Man and did quite a bit on the way back to their hotel, where we witnessed Mean Gene Okerlund partying with some 20-something girls. The best part of the night, maybe of my life, was when we pulled up to a stoplight. Macho Man, incredibly hyped at this point, as we all were, stuck halfway out of the sunroof next to a group of people waiting to cross the street and yelled, "Snap into a Slim Jim!" He scared the life out of about half of them. Then cheers erupted. I still chuckle about it to this day. Story 8. My friends and I were sitting in my apartment when my buddy Asian Nate, the Asian part is relevant to the story and also what we called him, started telling a story about how he had recently injured his eye while, well, entertaining himself. Nate is a terrible storyteller. In the middle of his story, my other buddy Jeremiah got up to use the restroom. For context, Nate was sitting in a recliner in the corner of the living room. The restroom Jeremiah went to was at the opposite end of the room and a few feet down a hallway. If I had to guess, I'd say it was about 20 feet from the recliner to the bathroom door. Also important to the story, Nate rambled long enough that Jeremiah had time to use the restroom, wash his hands, and step back into the hallway to hear the end of the story. Evidently, his hands were feeling a bit dry, so he grabbed the economy-sized bottle of lotion from the bathroom. Yeah, when four guys live in one place, a 32-fluid-ounce lotion bottle is practical. And stood in the hall applying it while listening to the rest of Nate's story. Well, I guess Jeremiah used more lotion than expected. And just as Nate got to the punchline, saying, "And then I got it in my own eye," Jeremiah lost his grip on the bottle. What happened next defies explanation. The bottle flipped perfectly in the air and landed pump side down. As Nate finished the story, a stream of lotion shot across the room, some 20 feet, and landed directly in his eye. If I live to be 100, I'll never see a more perfect sequence of chaotic timing. It was magical. Story 9. My friend got a girl pregnant when he was 13, and the girl was 15. They met at the beach in Panama City, Florida. She was wealthy and lived in Ohio. He was from Georgia and came from a modest background. My friend never told anyone but me. He's now 28 and has a 15-year-old child that only I know about. The only reason he got away with it is because the girl's family was extremely wealthy. She never said who the father was and would sometimes fly down to visit him in secret. I didn't believe it until I saw pictures of his kid. His child has never met him, and I don't think the kid even knows he exists. I've always daydreamed that if my friend were to pass away, I would have to tell his parents that they had actually been grandparents for 15 years without knowing it. Story 10. When I was around 15, I was outside swinging. I don't care what anyone thinks, I love to swing. There was a storm coming, so the playground was completely empty. I was swinging, just enjoying myself, when I looked up into the sky. And do you know what I saw? I saw a flying saucer. Yes, an actual UFO. I skidded to a stop and ran out into the field for a better view. My eyes weren't playing tricks on me. There it was, right in the sky. From where I was standing, it looked about the size of a dime. It looked exactly like the ones in 1950s sci-fi movies. Metallic, circular, with a dome coming out from the bottom center. The only difference was the way it flew. It wasn't moving in a straight line. It oscillated side to side, kind of surfing through the air. I watched it for about a minute until it vanished into the clouds. I ran home. It was only a block away. I burst into the house, yelling to my dad about what I had just seen. But fate has a sense of humor. Want to know why? At that exact moment, an episode of That 70s Show was on. It was the episode where Kelso claims he saw a UFO and convinces everyone to look at the sky with him. At the end, they find out it was just plane lights or something similar. My dad looked at me, then at the TV, and then he just lost it. He laughed hysterically right in my face. I didn't know what to think. I knew how ridiculous the whole thing looked. Then I lost it too and started laughing. I spent the next hour trying to convince my dad that I really did see a UFO. I'm not saying I saw aliens or anything. I just know what I saw. It wasn't a weather balloon. I'm dead serious. To this day, I still tell people the story. No one has ever truly believed me. Story 11. When I was about 11, I went to this big children's fishing festival where all the kids had their names put into a hat and drawn to determine which guide they'd be paired with, usually in groups of 2 to 3 per guide. As luck would have it, my name was drawn first, so my brother and I got to go with the number one guide there, who happened to be a professional fisherman or something. He was the only guide who brought his own cameraman. An actual camera guy followed us around. Apparently, this guide, who was very nice and I had a great time with, was a somewhat well-known fishing video creator. My brother and I were filmed every time we reeled in a fish. He told us we might make it into one of his videos or maybe even appear on a fishing TV show, though he wasn't sure. One Sunday morning, I was sitting there watching ESPN before church, and sure enough, there I was with my little brother catching a big walleye. Of course, my parents were getting ready, and my brother was in the shower, so no one else saw it. But it was wild. This was before DVR or anything, and I had no idea it was going to be on, so I couldn't record it. But I was on ESPN for like 30 seconds. Probably the pinnacle of my fame right there. Story 12. In February, I went on a backpacking trip to India with a friend. It was triggered by us not knowing what we wanted in life, so everything was pretty spontaneous and radical. We landed in Bangalore and had a good 2 weeks of traveling until we ended up at tourist-heavy Palalam Beach, Goa, staying in a cheap bungalow. After those 2 weeks, we were supposed to check out so we could move on and travel somewhere else. But the night before, something happened that changed our plans. We were walking on the beach to a so-called silent party where everyone wears headphones to listen to music because of nighttime noise regulations. As usual, I was carrying my guitar with me, something I had bought there because it was a great way to strike up conversations and just jam with people. We passed by two friendly Indian guys who started talking to us. No big deal. They just seemed like they wanted to chat, right? They ended up inviting us to breakfast the next day, which happened to be the same day we were checking out. We agreed since we were already used to chatting with strangers and didn't think much of it. The next day, we checked out as planned and met up with them. We thought it would just take an hour or so. Suddenly, they pointed to their car and told us to get in so we could drive to their apartment nearby. I found that a bit odd since I had assumed we'd just be eating at a restaurant or something, but my friend had already gotten in the car, so I decided not to overthink it. After a 10-minute drive or so, we arrived at their apartment. Once inside, we noticed two more Indian guys and the mood quickly shifted. We tried to make small talk, but it seemed like they were waiting for something. Suddenly, they proposed that we help them smuggle jewelry to Japan in exchange for a large reward. According to them, there was some legal loophole that made it legitimate. That's when all my warning signals went off. We told them we didn't want to participate in this scheme and that we'd prefer to leave. That's when things took a darker turn. They got angry and insisted we had no choice. They made us sign papers, took pictures of our passports and credit cards, and had us provide our signatures. As this was happening, more men arrived, and we soon found ourselves surrounded. We had no idea how we were going to get out of this. After several business-like conversations and meeting a very disturbing guy, who looked like a Dave Grohl double with long hair and tattoos, they put us in a car with three of them and drove us to a nearby larger town. There they checked us into a low-end motel near the train tracks. We were never left alone and were terrified the entire time. The next day we received a call supposedly from Indian Customs, claiming that jewelry en route to Japan had been intercepted and that we needed to provide documentation proving it was purchased legally. Obviously, this wasn't Indian police, but the men holding us captive wanted us to believe it was. They insisted it was all legitimate. They even showed us what they claimed was the real jewelry, diamonds and emeralds, and let us see it being packed for shipping. At this point, we nearly believed the call had been real and that we were now wanted by the authorities. It's insane how fear can cloud your judgment. They told us we had to wait for more people who would help us deal with this situation. We were terrified and asked if we could sit in the downstairs restaurant to be in public. They agreed, and five or six more men arrived. One of them had a noticeable scar, and another introduced himself as Max. He said he would help us with customs. We would later find out that Max was extremely unstable and capable of anything to get what he wanted. At the hotel, we were instructed to call our banks and try to increase our credit limits. They then proceeded to empty our accounts using a card terminal, likely connected to one of their fake jewelry companies. I had to go to a nearby internet cafe to log into my online banking, and while I was gone, Max threatened my friend. My friend didn't tell me until later, so I had no idea not to engage with him. When I returned and said the bank refused to unlock all of my funds due to policy restrictions, Max snapped. He stared directly into my eyes and accused me of lying. That's when I realized just how dangerous he was. I repeatedly told him there was nothing more I could do except try to get someone from home to wire me money. Eventually, he let it go. After spending the whole day draining our bank accounts, they put us in a taxi, possibly rented or stolen, and drove us deep into the jungle in the middle of the night. At this point, we were sure we were going to be murdered and dumped. We had heard stories of missing tourists in Goa. I even had my dull pocket knife from Tuscany in hand, just in case. After a long, terrifying ride, during which we had two different drivers who almost got us killed, we finally arrived in Mumbai. They drove us to the airport, and at the first terminal, I was forced to withdraw the last of my money and hand it over. This all while being surrounded by about 10 security guards carrying MP5s. We didn't ask for help because we genuinely believed we might be wanted by Indian authorities. As I was handing Max the last of the money, I hesitated and said I didn't want to. That was a mistake. He stood still for about 5 seconds, filling with rage. He then threatened to slit my throat and charged at me. Fortunately, the other guy, who was a bit more level-headed, held him back. A security guard approached and asked if we were okay. It must have been a bizarre sight, me holding a large amount of rupees, flanked by two visibly unstable men. I wanted to cry out for help, but they had promised to send us home, likely to keep us from reporting them. So I told the guard we were fine. He looked at me oddly and said my money should be in my pockets. After that, we were told to get into a taxi to drive to another terminal and board the plane home. I wanted to stay behind, especially knowing I'd have to sit next to someone who had just threatened me. But I couldn't abandon my friend. We got in the taxi and went to the next terminal. At the new terminal, we took an elevator to a more secluded part of the airport. Max demanded the money I had refused him earlier. I hesitated mainly because I was afraid. He lost control again, hit me in the stomach, emptied my pockets, and began burning the cash. Yes, he was completely unhinged. He said it meant nothing to him and claimed I had offended him by offering it after initially refusing. The more rational man calmed him down again, and eventually I handed over the rest of the money. We finally got our tickets and entered the terminal. At last, we were away from them and had legitimate tickets back home. We just had to make it through passport control, which Max claimed had been bribed with something like 500,000 rupees. We were still terrified of Indian police and wanted to contact authorities back home, but we got through without any problems. We flew from Mumbai to Abu Dhabi and managed to scrape together enough money to buy each of us a Big Mac. After food poisoning and eating only chicken in India, it felt amazing. From Abu Dhabi, we flew to Brussels and then took a small propeller plane home. When we landed, we immediately reported everything to police at the airport. Since then, we've had to give long statements and go through interviews. Whether the bank or insurance will cover our losses is still uncertain, but we'll find out soon. We've also had to see a psychologist multiple times to assess whether we're dealing with post-traumatic stress. Story 13. Back in 10th grade, my buddy James and I were hanging out in the ROTC room with one of the cool teachers before classes started for the day. As we got ready to leave, I cracked open a Coke as we headed out the door to our first period class. That's when the strict teacher across the hall came out just in time to see me drinking in the hallway. She started yelling and threatened to write me up for having a drink in the hall, since as everyone knows, food or drinks in the hallways usually end up causing messes when it comes to teenagers. James and I laughed it off. As I turned around, I tripped over my own feet. I could feel her eyes locked onto me and knew I was done for. Instinctively, I threw out my hands to catch myself and let the Coke fend for itself. James turned to see what had happened and witnessed the whole thing. Somehow, I managed not to fall on my face. I took three huge steps and caught my balance. During all of this, a small part of my brain was screaming, "Save the Coke, forget your face." In a blur, I threw out my hand three times, tapping the Coke can each time, sending it spinning end over end, and finally snatched it out of the air. Without spilling a drop. I swear I heard jaws drop. I looked back at the strict teacher, gave her a casual nod, took a swig of my victorious Coke, and kept walking. James burst out laughing and couldn't stop talking about how incredible it was. We still bring it up to this day, and it always gets a laugh. Story 14. My great-great-great-grandpa, Earl Bordeman, created quick cake mix. He liked inventing things as a hobby. One day while in his kitchen, he had an idea. Why not create a cake mix that only required eggs and milk instead of a long list of ingredients? So, he developed an easy, quick mix in his own kitchen. He didn't see much in it at the time and ended up giving it to his close friend, Marjorie Husted. After seeing the potential, she stopped talking to my great-grandpa and went on to claim herself as the inventor. A few years ago, my mom, whose side of the family Earl belonged to, tried contacting Betty Crocker Inc., just to get a simple certificate acknowledging our story. They never responded or even acknowledged our attempts to reach out. So now I'm left with just my 100% honest word. Growing up, I got teased whenever I told the story. People thought I was lying, but my family knows the truth. We've got plenty of other impressive achievements to look at besides the missed opportunity for billions. Honestly, it doesn't affect me that much. But knowing that I could have been ridiculously wealthy if my great-great-great-grandpa had simply patented the quick mix and asked for shares in the company, that stings a little. So yeah, that's my story that no one ever believes, all because Earl didn't patent his idea. If you ever create something, patent it. And the next time you buy cake mix for someone's birthday, remember that Earl Bordeman invented it, and Marjorie Husted took all the credit. Story 15. When I was in middle school, there was this girl who constantly bullied me. She was much bigger than me and even dragged me around by my hair once. I obviously couldn't stand her, but with teachers and parents always around and the fact that she was stronger than me, I couldn't do much about it. Anyway, I finally got my revenge at school camp. We went to this place with an archery range and log cabins. Archery happened to be something I was pretty good at. One evening, I stayed behind to practice on my own. The staff trusted me enough to let me do that. While I was shooting, she happened to walk by the range and spotted me. She started yelling some awful things, trying to provoke me. I tried to ignore her, thinking she wouldn't dare come onto the range while I was actively shooting. But she did. She hopped the fence and told me she was going to mess me up for ignoring her. At this point, she was about 100 meters away. I was scared, but also incredibly angry. I was so tired of her torment. I had an arrow already knocked and told her, "I will shoot if you don't back off." Of course, she didn't stop. So I let the arrow fly, and it hit her. I ended up taking off a small chunk of her ear. It scared her so badly that she ran off to tell someone, but no one believed her, and she never came near me again. Story 16. It was back in May 2009 during basic training at Fort Jackson. We were finishing up a team-building obstacle course. Our platoon was the last to leave when some cameras, lights, and a trailer rolled in, and one soldier was in the middle of it all. He approached us, thanked us for our service, gave high fives, and joked around. We even did some push-ups with him while he cracked jokes nonstop. We got to watch him bust it on the obstacle course and get yelled at by a drill sergeant. It was hilarious. A few of us even helped him out. Our drill sergeants were surprisingly cool with all the fun. I remember thinking, this has to be a test. We're going to get smoked later. But it turns out it was Stephen Colbert filming his Army of Me tour. A few of us recognized him, but we could hardly believe it. The guy's in great shape and looked like a high-ranking officer. Story 17. When I was 15, my friend told me that he shaved his pubic hair and that girls like that, so I thought I'd give it a try. The only problem was I didn't have a razor. I could barely grow facial hair yet. So I borrowed my mom's bright pink razor and locked myself in the bathroom to get started. I had just sprayed myself with shaving gel and taken the first swipe when the door suddenly flew open. The lock was on, but the door didn't fully latch, as I frustratingly found out. My mom stormed in with her pants halfway down, ready to use the toilet, and looked at me in horror. There I was, awkwardly hovering over the toilet, pink razor in hand, and her razor full of my pubic hair. I was also aroused, thinking about what I was going to do once I was freshly shaved. I was mortified, but had to finish. My mom waited outside the bathroom, and when I came out, simply said, "Never use my razor again, please." We never spoke of it again. I told my friends later, but they didn't believe me since my mom denies it ever happened. She's a very private, religious woman. It was embarrassing, but looking back now, it's pretty hilarious. Story 18. One summer I worked at a ranch with four friends near the Ibapah Indian Reservation, where my cousin owned a trading post. There was about half a mile of dirt road from the store to the main road. On that road, there were typical lines of tar, like you see on most roads. A little further down, there were three or four names written in tar. The only one I remember clearly was George Cook's. George's name was written again about half a mile further down. One day we decided to find out who George Cook's was, so we started with the cemetery. We found one grave with the name George C., an infant who didn't live past 9 months. That creeped us out until we found another grave, George C. Cook's, who died in his 30s. About a week later, everyone but me had gone home for one reason or another. Around 20 minutes after they left, I started burning boxes in the fire barrel. I had walked around it several times to make sure nothing outside would catch fire. Later, the guys returned and joined me at the fire. One of them pointed at the barrel and asked, "Where did you get the tar for that?" Confused, I walked around to his side and saw it, the word George written on the side of the barrel in tar. It was in the same style as on the road, in fine lettering like it had been written with a Sharpie. I still can't convince them it wasn't me, even though my handwriting is terrible and my cursive is even worse. Story 19. I was brought on stage at a Green Day concert to play drums. I dislocated my knee trying to be cool and did a heel click on the way up the riser. My knee buckled with every step. When I got to the drum set, Trey Cool and his drum tech noticed how badly I was hobbling and didn't want me to play. Billy Joe Armstrong came back and asked what was going on. They told him I busted my knee. Billy's response, into the mic at a sold-out Bank Atlantic Center, 32,000 people, was, "Broke his knee? Shake it off, man. It's time to play the drums." So I did. I played a cover of Knowledge by Operation Ivy with Billy Joe Armstrong and Mike Dirnt. At the end of the song, I did a drum fill, and Trey called me an asshole, in a joking way. Then remembered I was injured and helped me down the riser. I was taken backstage where paramedics checked my leg. Billy Joe's wife was there and told people to give me one of everything from the merch booth. But then the lawyers moved her away, and I didn't get anything except the drumsticks I played with, which I later lost. Then it was just me and a handler. She asked if I needed anything. I looked down the hallway and saw Jim Adkins talking to someone. Jimmy Eat World had opened the show, and I was a huge fan. So I asked him, "Can I meet him?" She walked over, said a few words, then came back and said, "He said he'll come by when he's finished talking." but in my experience, don't hold your breath. She left to get me water. As I was chatting with a paramedic, Jim came out of nowhere, put his hands over my knee and shouted, "Get out of him, Satan, get out!" Then he laughed and asked what happened. I told him the story and he said, "Seriously? You were brought on stage with Green Day and busted your knee? That sucks." He pulled up a chair and hung out with me for 30 minutes until the end of the show, when staff kicked me out. It was 2005. I was 20 years old. Best concert of my life. Story 20. I was coming home drunk with a few friends late at night. While waiting for the subway, we took turns going to the end of the platform to relieve ourselves behind a maintenance closet. The first guy went and came back saying, "There's something strange back there." The second guy went and said, "Yeah, there's something big wrapped in a garbage bag." When I walked over, I saw something large wrapped in multiple garbage bags and tied with duct tape. When I looked closer, I saw the cuffs of some dirty...
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
Lowe's knows how to set off your July 4th with savings. Right now, buy one, get one free on select one coat coverage interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Plus, get two select 2 or 2.5 quart red, white, and blue annuals for just $10. Hurry, these July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, excludes Alaska and Hawaii. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for more details.
Pants and sneakers sticking out from the bottom of the bag. I was drunk, but still sober enough to realize I was probably looking at a dead body. As the three of us were discussing what we had just found, a nearby homeless woman overheard us. She said, "You shouldn't have seen that. He's going to be really upset when he finds out." She kept rambling about how the man, who presumably left the body there, was going to come after us. Needless to say, we were completely freaked out and got the hell out of there. Story 21. When my older brother and I were kids, about 12 and 7 respectively, we went to play in an open field and found some thin PVC pipes to sword fight with. They were about 1 inch in diameter and 4 to 6 feet long. Things got really intense in our play fight. We added pretend wire foo and fireballs and then jumped away from each other like in any martial arts or anime battle for the final attack. We stared each other down for a good 5 seconds before my brother wound up like a baseball pitcher, lead leg raised and all, and hurled his weapon like a spear directly at my head. I remember hearing the whistling noise of the pipe as I tightly shut my eyes and instinctively raised my sword in front of me like a samurai. Then I heard a loud snap and my hands felt like I had just slapped a concrete wall. I opened my eyes and saw his plastic javelin split right in half, now lying in 2 pieces on either side of me. Not only had I blocked the thrown weapon, but I also managed to break it in midair. My hands were wringing from the impact, but neither of us were hurt, and we both freaked out at how cool it was. Moments later, my brother commented that I was really lucky, and we became convinced I must have had a guardian angel that day. A week later, we sword fought again using plastic baseball bats, and I managed to smash the ceiling light. The glass cut and scarred my arm. Our theory was that my guardian angel must have facepalmed and left to protect some smarter kids. Story 22. It was July 5th, probably 6 years ago now, and my friends and I were setting off some extra fireworks. I live on the north shore of Long Island, right on the Sound, which is pretty hilly. We had to walk about a quarter to half a mile along the side of a sand dune cliff to reach a clearing where we could safely light fireworks. For context, the path is narrow. On the left, there's some small brush and about a 100-foot drop. On the right, there's dense forest leading into a state park that stretches 2 to 3 miles deep. It was about 3 a.m., and we were walking back after finishing the fireworks. At that point, the Beechwoodsharn cliff was on our right and the deep woods on our left. Suddenly, we heard rustling in the woods. No big deal. We assumed it was a deer. But then, 10 steps later, we heard it again, closer. We stopped talking and picked up the pace. About 20 feet later, the sound was right on top of us, and a man, probably in his 50s, stepped out of the woods directly in front of us. He was wearing a brown pinstripe suit, a matching top hat, a black briefcase, and those old-fashioned glasses like the kind Roosevelt wore. He calmly said, "Well, good evening, boys. How are you tonight?" We didn't wait around. We ran, full sprint, and never looked back. To this day, I have no idea what that man was doing there, but it still creeps me out. Story 23. As a board art student in my freshman year, I decided it was the perfect time to fulfill a weird personal goal, to prove I was hot enough to be a dancer. After auditioning, which was basically just showing you could move on a pole and undress, I got the job and started working random nights and weekends. Turns out the Gentlemen's Club used to be Orlando's, the same one seen in The Wire. By the time I worked there, it was renovated, but the layout was still similar. Also, I met and spent some time with Michael Phelps there. One night, an extremely attractive young British man kept buying lap dances from me. He was with a group of colleagues in town for a pharmaceutical convention, or something like that. After a lot of drinks and flirtation, he finally asked for a room upstairs in the VIP lounge. 15 minutes in one of those rooms cost $375. Now, I wasn't broke, I was a student with no bills to pay, so $375 just to spend 15 minutes with someone seemed easy. Amazing, even. The rooms were cozy with a bedroom vibe, a nice couch, a private pool, stage, and bottle service. Bouncers stood right outside, so if you got uncomfortable, you could just open the door and walk out. But the moment we got in, he went down on me. At first, I was uncomfortable, but eventually I gave in. Yes, the man was British and ridiculously attractive. Sue me. He ended up giving me a mind-blowing experience, and I got paid for it. I literally got paid to be on the receiving end of pleasure. Yes, in hindsight, I know how risky that was. I could have caught something. Thankfully, I didn't. It was an incredible experience. Being 19, drinking for free, and having attractive, interesting, wealthy men asking for your time. Whether it was for a dance, a compliment, or a moment in the VIP lounge, I felt empowered. After that, I never doubted that if I really wanted something, I could make it happen, even if it meant stepping out of my comfort zone. My mother eventually found out, though, and cried when she learned about the Michael Phelps encounter. She thought it was awful that I was doing something so scandalous in front of an American hero. Story 24. During my freshman year of college, I had a dream where I was riding in a taxi van with one of my best friends and an unknown girl sitting between us. The girl was struggling to use a bobby pin to keep the top half of her skirt together to avoid showing too much cleavage. I think we were heading to some sort of work event because we were all wearing business casual. The girl asked us for help, and the dream slowly started to turn a bit flirtatious. But before anything actually happened, the dream ended. Fast forward about 2 years during the summer after my junior year. I was interning at a company in New York City. My friend came up to NYC to pick up his passport and happened to know one of the female interns at my company. We all decided to get a drink at an after-work event hosted by the company. The three of us hopped into the back seat of a cab, my friend and I on either side, and the female intern in the middle. Guess what? She was trying to use a safety pin to hold her top together. I even caught a quick glimpse. Dream come true. Story 25. When I was 8 years old, I asked the universe for someone I could dedicate my life to. Someone who would be everything I was looking for and love me just as much as I would love them. I made a list of 10 qualities I wanted my future boyfriend to have, and I waited. Over the years, I lost the list, but I never dated anyone. During my sophomore year of high school, I was listening to a boy in my class, who I was friends with, give a speech about reading music. Suddenly, the classroom around me turned black. Stars and planets appeared all around me as if I were floating in space. I was still sitting in my desk, and he was still at the podium giving his speech. For about 5 minutes, it was just the two of us surrounded by a cosmic backdrop. Then everything went back to normal. A week later, I was sitting in my room still thinking about the experience when it dawned on me. Maybe this was the sign that my request had been granted. I'm happy to say that he and I have now been together for 9 years. I actually remember most of what I put on that list, and he checks off 9 out of the 10 things. Note, I wasn't on any drugs, nor had I ever taken any. I also wasn't dehydrated. It was real to me. Story 26. When I was 12, my brother was around 17 or 18 and had the family truck, a 1968 maroon Chevy 2500. a manly truck by all accounts. He worked retail in high school and was working late one night when the truck was stolen from the store's parking lot. It was missing for about a week. We were all pretty upset since the truck had been in our family for decades. One day, while the whole family was working on the farm, a guy walked up the driveway asking to use our phone because he had run out of gas. No problem. We're nice country folks. We walked over to his vehicle, and that's when we noticed something odd. The color, a deep maroon Chevy truck, sounded familiar. The tension in the air was thick as we got closer. It was identical to our truck, right down to the license plate. We may be simple, but we're not stupid. My mom started asking questions. "Hey, that's a really nice truck you have. What year is it?" she asked. He replied, "Oh, I think it's a 69. It's my grandpa's truck." My mom looked through the window and saw the ignition was torn up, with a hose running from a gas can in the cab to the engine. "Oh no, buddy," she said. "I think that's a 68. Want to know why I think that?" "Yeah, why?" "Because it's my goddamn truck." The guy started stammering, trying to talk his way out of it, but it wasn't working. There wasn't anything he could say. He bolted, leaving his female partner behind. She quickly followed him, and they ran down the road. I went to get my brother, who jumped on his motorcycle and flew down the road after them, but he never found them. We got the truck back into our garage and waited for my dad to cool off. They had been using the truck to transport trash and who knows what else. There were 4 to 5 bags full of mail, documents, receipts, you name it. We went through every single scrap. The truck had 3 gas tanks, and they hadn't figured out how to switch between them. So they tore up the carburetor and rigged a gas can with a hose. We called the police and picked the thieves out of a lineup, but nothing ever came of it. The cops just said, "Local trouble." We like to think the truck wanted to come home. Story 27. As a 20-year-old guy, I was being rolled into the operating room for a sports-related injury. The male doctor walking beside the gurney awkwardly placed his hand directly on my crotch and kept it there for a few seconds. He removed it, and then, a few seconds later, bam, right back on my crotch again. A nurse then joined in the walk, and I noticed the same doctor giving her a strange glance. As we turned a corner, she suddenly extended her hand and placed it on me, in the same exact spot the doctor had touched just seconds before. At this point, I was starting to feel pretty alarmed. The anesthetist didn't delay in putting me under, but right before I went out, I made a mental note to check for anything suspicious when I woke up. The first thing I did when I came to was check my crotch, but nothing seemed out of the ordinary. I told my dad, but he thought I was imagining things. Story 28. I went to a place called Roxy's in East Street. Louis after a kart race held at a nearby racetrack where guys like Michael Andretti and Al Unser Jr. would have raced. This was back in 1998 or 1999. I ended up at Roxy's because someone gave me 2 $10 off admission passes while I was waiting in line to buy beer. At Roxy's, I spent almost all my money, except my last $24. Then I saw this absolutely gorgeous dancer. She was exactly my type. I gave her the last of my cash. She was 100% nude, and said, "That's all I've got left. Can I get a lap dance?" She said, "Yes." We walked over to a chair and she said, "The song's not over yet, so this part's free. You'll get 2 full songs after this." So I got about half of You Shook Me All Night Long for free and got a quick lesson in how lap dances work. I asked if I could touch her chest and she let me, but only after looking around to make sure it was safe and telling me when to do it. My buddy, who was really into kart racing, was absolutely stoked. We joked about it the whole ride home. At some point, I ended up puking out the window of his Jetta. He remembers that part vividly. Story 29. As best as I can tell, I've died twice and come back on my own. I once described my symptoms to an army medic, and he said it sounded like some form of cyanosis. But I wasn't in any environment that would have triggered that. In the first case, I was sitting in my room, writing emails or messing around on the internet, when I realized I had no heartbeat. I stood up, looked in the mirror, and saw my face was pale and my lips were blue. No pulse, none. For some reason, I found it incredibly funny and started laughing. The next thing I remember, I was on the phone with my mom, describing heart attack symptoms. I had obviously been talking for some time, though I barely remembered calling her. For all I know, it could have been a day or two later. A couple of years later, something very similar happened. I blacked out and came back about 15 minutes later. It hasn't happened since, but I'm sure I was some variety of dead. I know there are probably other explanations, but that's the best I can come up with. Story 30. I was forced to drive while heavily intoxicated by two on-duty uniformed police officers. I had been staying overnight at a hotel near a ski resort after a college day event where everyone drank way too much. Several friends and I chipped in for a room so we could crash there safely. Around 11 p.m., we got a stern knock on the door. Hotel staff told us we needed to quiet down. Fair enough. We were playing drinking games and being loud. So we kicked out anyone who wasn't staying overnight, and by then, everyone was either asleep or silent. Then another knock. This time, it was two police officers. They told us the hotel owner had asked for us to be removed from the premises. I explained that everyone was calm now, and more importantly, that we were too drunk to drive. The officers insisted we leave and demanded that we move our vehicles as well. When I pointed out that they were essentially forcing me to drive drunk, one of them said they wouldn't pull me over or follow me, but I had to leave. They even suggested I just pull over down the road and sleep it off. After arguing for a bit, I gave in, because the alternative was being arrested for trespassing. Several of us had to drive drunk that night. Definitely some questionable police work. Story 31. I dream about things before they happen. Nothing big or life-changing. It's usually mundane stuff. For example, I'll dream about driving up a hill and a black van comes down the other side, kicking up leaves in a very specific way. Then days, weeks, or even years later, that exact moment happens. Most of the time, it's just little things like that. But the most interesting one happened about 5 months before the last Harry Potter book came out. I dreamed that I opened the box it came in. I had pre-ordered it online, sat on the couch, crossed my legs in a certain way, and the sun hit the book just right. I opened it, looked at the chapter art, and read the first page. When the book finally arrived months later, I went through the exact same motions without even realizing it, until I opened to the first page and saw what I had already read in my dream. So yeah, basically I got a free preview of Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows in my sleep. Story 32. Koh Phi Phi, Thailand, 1995. I was walking back to the bungalow after being in the main town with my girlfriend. It was around 2 in the afternoon and we were walking along the shoreline. I was maybe 10 yards ahead when I saw a swarm of tiny baby crabs and called out, "Come take a look!" As she caught up to see the crabs, I glanced farther along the shore and spotted a baby shark that had washed up, stuck between two stones as the tide was going out. I grabbed it gently by the tail and then supported it underneath the head. We looked at it for a moment, even stroked it a bit, then released it back into the water and watched as it swam away. It was a chunky little thing, just a one-minute magical experience. A week earlier, we were in Hod Rin after the full moon party. People had a small street market set up, and everyone was coming down after the effects of various things wore off. That's when I saw a big, mean-looking monkey wearing full makeup and lipstick, honestly looking like some kind of simian drag queen. Apparently, some lunatic had dressed it up like that. Story 33. When I was about 14 or 15 years old, I used to take my father's car, without his knowledge, for joyrides or to pick up weed with a buddy of mine. One particular night, my friend and I had just picked up some bud and were parked at a local park around 9 p.m. We were in the parking lot rolling a blunt when a police officer pulled in and turned his spotlight on us. It's important to note that I had been arrested before. I was a bit of a wild kid, and I was terrified of going to jail again. As the police car got closer, I started backing out of the parking space to leave. But before I could get to the exit, the officer turned on his sirens. My friend was panicking, asking what to do with the weed on his lap. And me? I floored it and took off down the road. Yep, I was in a car chase with a police officer. Speeding down the road, I turned onto the first street I saw, only to realize it was a cul-de-sac. I was trapped. In a split-second decision, I ditched the car, left my friend behind, and bolted into the woods behind the houses. I swear I've never run that fast in my life. I felt like I could have outrun a cheetah. The adrenaline was insane. I made it to a wooded area between neighborhoods and sat down to catch my breath. I could hear sirens all around me and started getting really nervous. Then I heard a helicopter approaching. I remembered how movies show them using infrared to find people. So I crouched into a ball and stayed completely still. Whether or not they had infrared, it seemed to work. After a couple of hours, I decided to move. I was about 5 to 6 miles from home, mostly through residential areas. I stayed hidden, sprinting when I could, and diving into bushes or behind houses at the sight of headlights. Eventually, I made it back. I knew I had to tell my dad. It was late, but I went into his room and told him what happened. He was livid. He was used to my delinquent tendencies, but this was beyond anything I'd done before. Not only had I broken the law, but I'd abandoned his car, full of weed, in a cul-de-sac. He had a business trip the next day, so he told me the best thing he could do was report the car stolen and tell the police he didn't know my whereabouts during the incident. He left for the airport in a cab the next morning. My older brother also lived with us, and I told him everything. He called me an idiot but agreed to play dumb if the police came by. And of course they did. An officer came and asked to question me and my brother. He wanted to know where I had been, who I was with, and how close I was to my friend. We'll call him Jeff. Apparently Jeff had stayed in the car and only gave them my first name. I made up a bogus story about being at a friend's house. The officer listened, then said, "You do realize I'll have to talk to everyone you said you were with?" I nodded. Then he said, "I think it's time you told me the truth." I looked at my brother, who told me to come clean, and I confessed everything. How scared I was, how sorry I was. The officer went outside to make a phone call. I thought for sure I was going to jail. When he came back in, he sat across from us and said, "What you did was serious. You risk not only your life and Jeff's, but also mine. You could be facing major charges, but there's a problem. I never saw your face. I can't confirm it was you driving." I was stunned. Was he really going to let me go? He continued, "Because I didn't get a clear view, I'm not going to arrest or charge you." It felt like a 20-ton weight had been lifted off my shoulders. Jeff did end up with a misdemeanor possession charge, but I felt like I had just used a get-out-of-jail-free card. The officer gave me a stern talk about who I was hanging around with. I apologized, thanked him, and he left. Now, I know what some of you are thinking. There's no law saying a cop has to see the suspect's face to arrest them, especially after a confession. And you're probably right, but all I can say is, that's exactly how it happened. Maybe he didn't want to ruin my future. Maybe he didn't want to do the paperwork. Or maybe he didn't want to admit he got outrun by a 15-year-old. I don't know, but I swear, it happened. Story 34. I used to work for a NASA contractor in the Crew Escape Equipment Division. We maintained and repaired the ACES, Advanced Crew Escape Suit, the orange suits astronauts wear when boarding the shuttle. One of our jobs was to train astronauts on how to put on and take off the suits, and we also helped them get dressed on launch day. We did this in JSC Building 6 in Houston. At the time, there was a Spanish astronaut, Pedro Duca, who was complaining about having to wear an American flag on his suit. All astronauts wear the American flag, because it's our shuttle, and if they're from another country, they can also wear their own country's flag as well. But Pedro refused to have the American flag anywhere on his suit and made a huge fuss about it. It actually turned into a bit of a diplomatic issue. NASA nearly kicked him off the flight over it. I was present during a training session when all of this went down. I mentioned to the guy standing next to me that I thought Pedro was being a big baby about the whole thing. The guy replied that he could see Pedro's point. That quickly escalated into a heated argument, and this guy started acting like a total jerk. I was getting ready to punch him, so instead I said, "Pedro's a stupid idiot, and so are you. If he can't be bothered to wear an American flag on an American flight, then he should find another way to get there. Space. You can both kiss my ass." I later found out the man I had argued with was the ambassador from Spain. Yep, I had just told the Spanish ambassador to kiss my ass. Apparently, it didn't bother him too much. He never complained, at least not officially. If he had, I definitely would have been fired. Pedro ended up getting his way. He never wore the American flag. If you look at any of his official NASA photos, he's not wearing one. Story 35. Last Christmas Eve, I got a phone call from someone I didn't know. I described his voice to everyone present. None of them recognized it. Stoic, sounded like a smoker. American, were all British. And oddly calm considering what he was telling me. "Get the F out," he said. Before I could respond, he repeated, "Get out now." It was dark outside, but I looked out the back door. I didn't see or hear anyone. "Red and white spots?" he asked. The dress I was wearing was red with white spots. Again, he said, "Get the F out now." He could clearly see me, but I couldn't see him, so I didn't argue. I got the few friends and family members present outside, and we waited on the curb. We were all looking around when, boom, a loud rumble followed by a sudden bang. Smoke started pouring out of the open front door, followed by fire. The entire kitchen, living room, hallway, two out of three bedrooms, and the landing were engulfed in flames. The firemen arrived quickly and the fire was dealt with. They chalked it up to a faulty appliance in the kitchen. Some of that stuff was very old, so it was believable. If he hadn't called, my family and friends most likely would have been trapped in the living room. There's only one route to the front door, the hallway. I would have been standing right in front of whatever exploded. I totally forgot about him for a few days. Eventually, I tried calling the number back to thank him, but I got a message saying, "The number you have dialed has not been recognized." Then on April 17th, I heard from him again. I was sitting in a cafe having lunch. He sounded a bit tired and groggy, but it was definitely the same voice. All he said was, "Wait, so I did." I started to thank him for what he did before, but he told me to shut up. I waited. A few seconds passed. Nothing. A minute or so, still nothing. Just the sound of a dog barking somewhere. Then the call cut off, and he didn't call back. I was done eating anyway, so I packed up and headed to my next destination. That's when I heard a loud crash and screaming. I walked a bit farther and saw a van had crashed into a pet shop right in front of me. The driver stumbled out. The pet shop owner was furious, and thankfully no one was seriously hurt, just the driver with a head injury. I'm pretty sure that if he hadn't called and kept me at that cafe, I would have been walking right in front of that van. And being 4'9" and pretty frail, that wouldn't have ended well. Story 36. Last year, I woke up from a very vivid dream in which an old friend from my hometown, a girl I hadn't seen or spoken to in months, was leading me up a set of stairs in an aging house I didn't recognize. When we got to the top of the stairs, the space was filled with nostalgic old photos and antique furniture. Then I noticed an elderly woman I had never seen before, slumped over in a chair in a dark corner of the room. It didn't feel scary, but there was a heavy, somber feeling. In the dream, my friend told me, "This is my grandma," but the woman never spoke. Even after I woke up, I couldn't shake the image of her looking so incredibly sad. 2 days passed and the dream still lingered in my mind. I couldn't let it go, so I decided, somewhat reluctantly, to text the girl from the dream and mention what I had seen. I assumed she would think I was completely weird. I didn't know anything about her family and didn't even know if she had a grandmother. The reply came the next day, and it still gives me chills. She wrote, "I'm doing fine, but I really appreciate you telling me that. Grandma passed away last night, and thanks to you, I was able to tell her I loved her one last time." Story 37. I experienced the fabled Vegas roulette story. I was playing at a regular table, starting with $100 and $5 chips. There were about four other players at the table. Two were a husband and wife playing a scattergun approach, literally placing chips all over the table. I wasn't sure what value they were using. I was playing six chips per spin, four on corners, one on a third, and one on a single number as my big target. Things were going steady. After about 2 hours, I was up to around $300. The couple began heavily betting on a particular single number, so in the spirit of camaraderie, the rest of us started placing chips on it too. I went big with two chips on it. Eventually, the couple's stacks dwindled. They cashed out and started walking away. The rest of us joked and told them they'd better run off just in case the number hit. And of course, you can guess what happened next. That exact number hit on the very next spin after they left. I don't remember their chip value, but I remember thinking they would have won around $3,000. I played a few more spins, then cashed out with about $800 in winnings. I met my girlfriend at the bar afterward and got absolutely smashed. One of the wildest, most surreal gambling experiences I've ever had. Story 38. Once, when I was about 5 years old, my family and I visited a beach in Florida near the Gulf of Mexico. After building a simple sandcastle, I waddled over to the water's edge and plopped down in the brackish waves. After a few minutes of covering my limbs with sand, I noticed a strange lump wash ashore. The beach was pretty empty, and my parents were farther down the shore, so I was the only one who saw it. The creature looked like a flat brown dome, coupled with a smaller dome behind it, with a single barb extending upward from the end of its thin, foot-long tail. Each shell was smooth, No bumps like a horseshoe crab. It had one red, beady eye that didn't move. It gave me the impression that it was dead. However, after a few more waves, the creature slowly drifted back into the water. I sat there puzzled, unsure of what I had just seen. But being a kindergartner, I didn't think too hard about it. I tried telling people about it later, but everyone assumed it was just the ramblings of a little kid. Now, years later, the memory still intrigues me. I've looked into it, but I've never found anything that matches what I saw. I still have no idea what that mystery creature could have been. Story 39. I not once but twice got out of a speeding ticket by letting the officer know that I would also be issuing him a ticket. After the first time, I always told people about it, and as usual, most didn't believe me. Then one day, while having lunch with colleagues from the office, the exact same thing happened again. They, of course, believed me after that, because they had witnessed it. But now, years later, anyone else I tell the story to is generally skeptical. The circumstances go like this. I'm driving along and come up behind a police officer. He's just casually driving, but in fact, he's speeding. I begin pacing him. He speeds up a little, I match it. Eventually, he moves into the next lane. At this point, I lock in my cruise control to maintain the same speed he was going. Then he drifts behind me, turns on the lights, and pulls me over. There's the usual chit-chat up front, and then I say, "Yes, officer, I was indeed breaking the law. You have every right to give me a ticket. However, you were speeding as well, and so I will be forced to reciprocate and give you a ticket too." I continue. "Here's the thing. For me, it'll be a small fine and I'll be done with it. But for you, it'll follow you the rest of your career. Most precincts don't like the idea of their officers breaking the law, especially while on duty." Both times, the officer gave me a warning and let me go. Absolutely priceless.
Lowe's knows how to set off your July 4th with savings. Right now, buy one, get one free on select one-coat coverage interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Plus, get two select 2 or 2.5 quart red, white, and blue annuals for just $10. Hurry, these July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, excludes Alaska and Hawaii. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for more details.